guys, I have something I need to tell you.
Warren and I are getting a divorce. I cheated on him, and I'm pregnant.
My life is over.
We're not some perfect family. We're screw-ups.
No, I'm not. I am still better than you.
You ruined your life because you got too horny. That is absolutely something we would do.
Guess you're one of us now, you stupid pregnant bitch!
This is the Extra Hot Gray Podcast, episode 630 for the week of August 31st, 2026. I am 50-something white guy with Asian wife, David T. Cole, and I'm here with crackpot bookseller, Sarah D. Bunting.
But they are, in fact, out to get me.
Dead celebrity reanimated with AI, Tara Ariano.
Not like this.
And halftime performer, E. Beatty.
Are you ready for concussions?
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she is a writer, retailer, and the co-founder of the Best Evidence newsletter. It's Eve Beatty. Welcome, Eve.
Eve.
We are here for the fall TV preview. We did it for summer. Now summer is about to end. We are picking up literally where we left off in the summer preview episode with the day after Labor Day. And we are going through our regular categories plus one that we've added. Those are, of course, a show you're into, a show you should be into but aren't, Catherine Van Arendonk's edition for the summer TV preview, and I quote, a show I should not be into and yet am, aka my quicksand zone, a show toward which your attitude is good for you, meaning a show you don't want to watch but you're not mad it exists, and a show nobody should be into, a show that exists and you are mad it exists. Shall we get started? Going around the horn with a show you're into.
I think we should. My first choice is a show called The Terrors of Jordan Mendoza. It is a quarter hour show on Adult Swim. It debuts September 13th. I had not heard about this show until very recently. The show feels like it's halfway between Jordan Peele and Julio Torres.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good combo. The trailer that's out features him in a library and all these white guys are like weirdly coming up to him. It's got a very liminal sort of quality to it. The first guy just asks where the bathroom is and he's like, I think it's over there. And then like unbidden, every white guy is telling him that they have Asian wives and where they're from. And it just goes on for that for like 2 minutes. And then, you know, there's sort of a get out crunch at the end of it. Made me laugh out loud. I really hope the rest of the show can live up to that because I was very pleasantly surprised. No screeners yet, but we'll see. Debuting soon. So you can look for that on Adult Swim. It really made me laugh.
I'm excited. He is a writer. His past credits include Chad Powers, which I just watched all of. Yeah. It's not on my list, but I was not mad it exists.
He acted in the Julio Torres stuff, too. So.
Yes, yes. And he was a writer on Neon, which is the other show from Shea Serrano that is not Primo, R.I.P. Primo. We will mourn it forever. I will go next. My show you're into is Neely, which premieres on Prime Video September 16th. This is the Reacher spinoff starring the Maria Sten character, Frances Neely. She's a private investigator in Chicago. When she learns that a beloved friend from her past has been killed in a suspicious accident, she becomes hell-bent on justice. Love that. Hope she breaks a bunch of people's arms and legs. Reacher is excellent dumb guy TV, which we've discussed recently on Extra Extra Hot Great. I am confident the spinoff will still be excellent dumb guy TV, even though it is about a lady. I'm sure she will bring her love of cereal and self-consciously vintage t-shirts to this production.
You mean her personality?
Exactly.
From Reacher?
Never. I mean, Reacher doesn't really have much of a personality either.
No,
so.
But it was so like, what's this one about? And she loves cereal. She's yep. She's out of a Quentin Tarantino scene from Pulp Fiction. Is
it's
it her?
True.
Yes.
Yes. She has two characteristics and I've already listed them. So yeah. But nevertheless, I'm excited for that one. Anyway, even though it's going to be probably very dumb. Sarah.
There's a lot to choose from here. Actually, for me, I was surprised as I was going through the schedule, but I decided to stick on Ken Burns's Crime and Punishment in America. You got to wait until November 16th for that one, and it will be premiering, shocker, on PBS.
Oh.
Voices include David Hyde Pierce, B.D. Wong, Matthew Reese, Keith David, and Others, directed by Lynn Novick, who did College Behind Bars. I thought they did an extraordinary job with the American Revolution series, with Vietnam. It is predictable in its quality, whatever that means for you, but I am interested to see where this goes, and that they're beginning really in colonial times. Should be fascinating. I am looking forward to it and have been for a while.
Very cool.
Eve!
Show that I'm into is The Lowdown, which I think passed a lot of people in its first season. Its second season is arriving on October 14th on FX and Hulu. This is Sterling Harjo, the creator of Reservation Dogs. It's his show in which Ethan Hawke plays a guy who owns a bookstore and Alt Weekly writer in Tulsa. The first season wasn't shot there. I believe the second season had a lot more that was actually shot there. It's an enormous source of pride for people in Tulsa. And it's just a pretty interesting, weird show. If you haven't watched the first season, I really think you should. Can't wait to see what sort of mystery he tackles in the second season.
And Betty Gilpin's coming.
Yes.
No, really? Oh, that's right. Oh, mm-hmm.
Even better news.
Yep. Okay, let's move on to a show you should be into but aren't. I'll move one notch to the left and start with me. My show that I was pretty sure no one else was going to pick for anything is A Different World, which is being revived on Netflix September 24th when Deborah, Dwayne Wayne, and Whitley Gilbert's free-spirited, well-intentioned, yet rebellious youngest child enters her freshman year at Hillman College. She finds the shadow of her parents difficult to escape as she sets out to build her own legacy while having the time of her life alongside a whole new generation of Hillman's best and brightest. So already it's like, okay, everyone in the show watched the original show if these two are being treated like celebrities. But I really love the original version. The presence of Debbie Allen as an executive producer and director and Gina Prince-Bythewood as an EP make me hopeful, but I am concerned about the change to single cam for the sequel. I think it is supposed to still be comedic, but I'm worried that it's going to have a wildly different tone than the original and be too wistful, too respectful, too reverent, too. I will be watching, but I do have reservations, so that's mine.
One of these reboots or revivals or re-rees really should just take the Pen 15 tack, where it's just the same cast and it's 30 years later, but they're all still playing high school or college students, and we just accept it so we can carry on with the storyline. Like, that's what they should have done with that 90210 show. It just should have been, we're all 50, but we're also all 20. And we're just going to do it. I'm going to be surrounded by kids, and you're just going to accept it. Like, you can get away with that even more on a sitcom. I don't know. Yeah. I just feel like if somebody did it, it would work.
Yeah. I mean, overcompensating has 35-year-olds playing college students. Like, it's not that much of a leap to.
Right. But that's what they're hoping to get away with it. Right.
Right.
And where I'm talking about is just like, you're in the room. You're like, this is a stupid conceit. You give it a big hug. And, one Mississippi.
Sarah, what is a show you should be into but aren't?
I'm going to go with A Killer Story that premieres September 10th on HBO. It's a limited documentary series about the Dana Chandler case. It isn't so much the case. The fact that it's on HBO should be promising. And I really don't enjoy saying this, but the last 2 years, I'm starting to feel like seeing a Liz Garbus credit. It's kind of turning into a Berlinger situation where whatever it is should be better and more rigorous than it is. And it just isn't. I found recent Garbus output quite whelming at best. It's on our coverage possibles list, but I just have a feeling it's going to be one of those that, like, we have active and then cold case. And eventually, after a few months, stuff gets moved to the cold case tab. And also, I am begging networks to title things more specifically. Mm. A Killer Story is already the title of like 78 things. Do better. Thank you.
Eve. Speaking of shows with bad SEO, people always ask me, you know, oh, what do you think of the paper? Because I started my career in local journalism, you know, have worked at local papers and, you know, am well aware of the stresses they face. Fucking hate the paper. Because it's everything that is actually wrong about with journalism, which is there's a hard working woman who's keeping this thing afloat, and then she's replaced by a mediocre white male who knows nothing. That is my stance on Esmeralda versus Ned. I'm sticking with it. And also, you know what? It's just not funny. It's not funny. It's the same way that I can't get behind, like, what's it, St. Denis Medical. Fucked up healthcare is not funny. Failing local journalism is not funny. I love you, Domhnall Gleeson. This show sucks.
I've been watching the screeners, perhaps, to pitch on it. And yeah, I really hated the first season, too, for those reasons. The idea that, like, it's about journalism in a story where we suppose that anyone can do it on top of their other jobs they also still have. Those problems continue to exist. All of that said, Eric Rahill forever. Love him. I only want the best for him, but everyone else can go to hell. Dave.
A show you should be into, but are not. I'm going to put Blade Runner 2099 here. And I've seen more than one reference to this being called Timu Blade Runner, which made me laugh. First of all, unnecessary. Blade Runner 2049, also unnecessary, in my opinion, the one with Ryan Gosling. So this is 50 years after the sequel, and apparently replicants now are ruling L.A. through methods. They are now the dominant force in L.A., and maybe the world's hard to tell. They're still Blade Runners, though. We're not totally out of contention. And Michelle Yeoh is one of them, but she's also, I think, a replicant, and she has a partner who is played by Hunter Schafer, and she's a human undercover, but the trailer seems to suggest that she gets the shit beat out of her and has to be replicantinized to survive. That's just my conjecture from watching the trailer. So it just seems like, how could we do Blade Runner, but just like mix up the ID cards of who's actually involved? Just unnecessary project, looks cheap, doesn't look as dirty as it should. Like, it looks like The Expanse. And The Expanse wasn't a clean-looking show, but it's not dirty enough for Blade Runner. Like, Blade Runner should look like Carson, California, Carson City. And it does not. So, always fun when Amazon takes their chance at a dystopian future in fiction.
Yeah, seriously.
Instead of providing one in the real world. But that is November 25th on Amazon.
Yeah, pass. All right, next, Catherine's edition, Quicksand Zone, aka a show I should not be into yet am. Sarah D. Bunting, what is your pick in this category?
Oh boy, I have a feeling I'm going to be stepping on Eve with this one, but Monster, Olin, Lizzie Borden story coming to Netflix September 17th. I do not understand this casting at all. I mean, I understand it from a Murphy Falchuk core perspective, but sure. Like Charlie Hunnam is Andrew Borden, the father who was 70 when he was killed, okay? And Sarah Paulson is Aileen Wuornos in the Lizzie Borden story. Uh-huh. I mean, look, we're going to see another variation on queer phobia and repression in an earlier age created the titular monster. I have zero problem with this creative team investigating that possibility, especially within the true crime genre. I think there is something there. It can lead to some sublimely dark shit, like in American Crime Story's second season. It can also lead to some absolutely exhausting camp, like Monster Begin season. I should not be intrigued or have any expectations for this. And yet, this is one of those cases that's like this weird Schrodinger's whack job situation where Lizzie has to have done it and yet cannot have done it. So I'm going to watch it because I'm that guy. I guess we'll see. Well, actually, most of us won't, because it's going to be the same issues as always with this team, which is that after episode 3, it's like, why are we still here? You always hope this is going to be the one where they actually like get it, sort of figure out how to get it to cohere and also maybe take some outside advice narratively. But yeah, we'll find out. I shouldn't fuck with it, but I'm gonna.
You've built your own prison and then now you have to lock yourself in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eve. I'm with Sarah in that I have chosen a Ryan Murphy property. Mine is American Horror Story season 13. Spooky. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that it's like, this seems like the fan service. It's this, that last Spider-Man movie where like everybody's in it, you know, ultimately fan service-y. Everybody's playing all the characters they used to play. Jessica Lange's back, all that. But it also is sort of like Good Drugs. I keep wanting to get that high I got from the first season of Murder House. It was so great. And I've never had that fentanyl high again from any of the, will this season be it? No, but I feel like good enough.
Makes sense. Dave.
So I came across this one absolutely by mistake. I had no intention of actually watching the trailer. And then after I watched the trailer, I'm like, yeah, maybe I could go for something like that. It's not my usual thing, but it looks well made. It's a show called The Final Problem. That's the name of, I think, the last Sherlock Holmes story, or one of the last ones where he brings Moriarty back. And it's like, all right, fine, you assholes, you little SOBs, just out of hold you. Uh-huh. So this show is sort of a Sherlock Holmes show, but also gives me Agatha Christie vibes even more so. So I was watching this trailer. At first, I thought, oh, this is a show somebody wrote thinking they're going to have the Perot rights, didn't get them. And now they're doing this. It has that sort of Agatha Christie vibe to it.
It's 1950. Oh, Poirot. I thought you meant Perot, like Ross Perot. Go on.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's what I heard, and also started wool gathering.
All right, everybody gang up on Mr. Mushmouth. 1959, there's a murder at a hotel. It's an isolated island in Spain. So can't get in, can't get out. No way off the island. 13 people in the hotel. Very Agatha Christie. The detective here is actually a retired actor whose minor claim to fame is that he played Sherlock Holmes in a bunch of shitty B movies at some point in the past. Mm-hmm. And he is the best detective they have on the island. So that's what they're going to go with. 8 episodes, which obviously is probably going to be too long for a story like this in the way that all these are. You know, you always are like, well, they could have shaved 2.5 episodes off that easily when they do these whodunits. But I'm also sort of in the mood for a Euro mystery, just something that happens over there. I just think Europeans with this type of show do better. An American mystery is a different animal usually. Mm-hmm. Like, I really wanted to like that Monsieur Spade show. I didn't, but I really wanted to. Yeah. Like, it had that vibe mm-hmm. where I'm like, yes, I'm into all this. A period piece, a mystery, a genteel European setting. Let's do it. This show looks beautiful, has all those things. It's sort of White Lotus-y, that it's a very nice hotel and a very nice location. And bad things have just happened, except it's more of a traditional whodunit. That is September 25th on Netflix. Hopefully, it won't suffer from too much Netflixitis.
That's always the hope, so seldom realized. My pick for this is Newlyweds, which premieres on NBC October 23rd. This is a later-in-life love story about a free-spirited woman, played by Taye Leone, and a buttoned-up professor, played by Tim Daly, who marry impetuously after a whirlwind courtship. And they are, of course, famously married in real life. They played husband and wife in Madam Secretary. And then they were like, you know what? Let's do this for real. And they did, which I love. Ignacio Diaz Silverio from Primo is in it as well. We're thrilled to support him.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.P. Primo. Yes, I said it twice in one episode. I'm sure this show will not be great. It's a multicam and like Jamie Lee Curtis is randomly an EP of it. But I can imagine myself being delighted by its retro charms. I mean, we'll see. But that's one that, you know, I would probably hesitate to recommend to anyone else, but will be devouring personally.
Doesn't Jamie Lee Curtis have a production company?
Yeah.
Yeah, she produced like Scarpetta, too. So,
Sticky.
You know,
she's...
Yeah. And the sticky. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Next, a show toward which your attitude is good for you, meaning you don't want to watch it, but you're not mad it exists. Eve, start us off.
The new season of The U.S. Traitors is on September 17th. This time it's Nobody Famous, which they're pitching as feature, not a bug. I think I'm done sort of with any episode of The Traitors that does not involve famous people because it's just not as interesting. And I'm getting a little tired of like Alan Cumming's whole thing. I'm glad he exists. I'm glad he's doing his thing, but I'm a little done with it. Instead, I would suggest that people turn on Million Dollar Secret. There's 2 seasons of it on Netflix. Peter Serafinowicz. I'm hopeful that I pronounced that correctly.
Close enough. Serafinowicz.
Serafinowicz, thank you. He's the host. He's better than Alan Cumming. If you want to watch just a bunch of non-famous people trying to figure out who's what, it's a way better show. Dave.
Thanks, Eve. Eve. No one really didn't work. Sorry, this is where I had Neely in the good for you, just because I just like, she's a nothing character to me. Maybe they'll be able to flesh her out, but we'll see. I mean, I'll watch a couple. So I'm going to go with my alt here, which is Get Jiro. So this is based on a not super well-regarded graphic novel, and it's famous because it was co-written by Anthony Bourdain. It's just this weird take where food is the currency and power dynamic of the future, and chefs are fought over by mob bosses, and it's whole this violent utopia that revolves around good eating, which, whatever. Titular character is a sushi chef, and he won't brook nothing that, you know, like if you put soy sauce on your whatever that you're not supposed to, he cuts your head off, that kind of stuff. He's like between two warring factions. It sounds like Yojimbo with sushi, basically. But the reason why I'm going to put good for you here is because it is animated and it looks like there's a lot of gooey 2020s Invincible style popping eyeballs and squirting this and that with the ultraviolence. So that's why I'm not going to put it any lower on our list. So I'm just going to go good for you if you're a fan of adaptations of this sort. But it looks real try hard, like really try hard. Mm.
All right. I will go next. My good for you show is Coven Academy, which premieres on Freeform October 1st. Here is the description. In the haunted heart of New Orleans, Coven Academy follows three teenage witches and their dangerously charming warlock peers at an elite magic boarding school where power is currency, secrets are lethal, and attraction is a liability. Caught between ancient supernatural wars and forbidden love interests, the Coven must decide how far they're willing to go to protect their city and themselves. Tiffany Thiessen is in this, playing a character named Ms. Graves. So I assume she's a teacher.
Okay.
I'm not going to be watching this, but if you have people in your lives who are counting down to the Harry Potter show, you can tell them there is an ethical option about witches at a boarding school, and it's this, and they should watch this instead. They should not watch the Harry Potter show. Nobody should. Sarah.
Vision Quest, which is the third in the Vision trilogy. That's October 14th on Disney Plus. I liked the first two well enough, but like I feel like between the Vision and Wanda one and Agatha, it was just like, it just sort of like got way top heavy in terms of the attention that was paid to it and the anticipation of the new series. And then when the second one came along, it was good. But unless you're a Patti LuPone completist, and I know you're out there within the sound of my voice, it was like, this isn't so good that we have to all be rearranging our cultural lives around it. And that's kind of when I decided to step out on that discourse. I like this cast, James Darcy, James Spader, but I just, this lore is like Marvel, am I right? So good for everybody who's excited about it. Mid-October on Disney Plus.
Well, I mean, when they killed off the original Vision and then this one's just about some middle-aged white guy, no thank you.
We have middle-aged white guy at home.
Yeah.
If there's going to be a Vision Quest about a middle-aged white guy, it needs to be Matthew Modine.
Thank you. Jumping rope under a spotlight.
That's my Vision Quest. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Fucking A.
Speaking of middle-aged white guys, we're back to Dave at the top for a show nobody should be into. Dave, what is your pick?
Usually there's something here where I get really mad about it, and it's an easy pick. But this one, actually, I had different shows I've already talked about in here. Like, I was like, is this where Blade Runner goes? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not quite sure. So there's a lot of, like, middling offerings I felt in this fall slate. But the one I went into, just because there's too many of them, is NCIS New York.
Yeah.
Which is October 6th on CBS. I mean, we all know what it is. It's NCIS, except they're doing it A, in New York, and B, navally. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, I bet people that don't really like Taskmaster have the exact same reaction to this, which is like, there's too many location variants of this series. Please eliminate three. I'm not a crackpot.
Yeah.
However, I do want the NCIS universe to sort of operate how I feel it does in my head, which is they never get off boats. It's a bit like Night Boat. From The Simpsons, except they can't really solve a lot of crime in New York City because it's very hard to get the boats onto like Broadway or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great. That I would watch. It's got LL Cool J.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And it's got Scott Khan.
Sure.
And Jennifer Beals apparently is the Benson of the show.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well. So despite all this I just said, despite the category that we're in, I will allow all our listeners' parents to watch without penalty.
That's so generous, Dave.
Thank you.
My pick for a show nobody should be into is Wonka's The Golden Ticket, which first
that
of
was
all,
on my
that
short list.
Fucking title, ugh. Wonka's The Terrible. Why not just Wonka's Golden Ticket? This premieres on Netflix September 23rd. In this one-of-a-kind reality competition, lucky players step inside Wonka's chocolate factory to face unpredictable games, tests, and temptations. And this is the one that people have been mad about for months as soon as they found out that it includes an AI reanimated Gene Wilder
as
Willy Wonka.
Oh,
yes.
No.
Yes. I don't feel like I need to say more about this. Like this
Wilder
is
family needed some dosh.
Bit just absolutely misbegotten and terrible and wrong. Speaking of unethical, terrible. Do not watch this. Don't encourage them.
Wow.
To do
on
this
screen or like narration, or do we know?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, because that would be really horrific if you somehow, but it's a reality show, so he can't be on.
It's gotta like
be
Double Dare.
It's got to be pre-tape stuff. Or
I'm sure he's not hosting.
Stink. Well, you never know.
I guess I don't.
I mean, you can do something in real time and then deepfake it after, but that seems like a lot of money to spend on a reality show.
Yeah, bad. Sarah.
Yes, Wonka's The Golden Ticket would have been on my list even without the AI Wilder aspect, but obviously I got to go Unmasking a Monster, Aileen Wuornos. Like, this is the we replicated Aileen with AI one, and why was this done? The cases are not unsolved. She was not notoriously retiring or unwilling to speak to cameras. We have thousands of miles of footage of actual Wuornos. Because we could is not a reason to make true crime. Everyone within the sound of my voice who makes true crime, because we could is not a reason. This is terrible. And the AI app, it all doesn't help. But this is actually sort of an interesting, like, if you feel like pointing to AI is out of control, if you feel like pointing to one example, it's like we're just making stuff that's superfluous and at cost to victims' families and everyone's sanity. It's bad. It, of course, is on ID on September 30th, but please avoid investigation discovery on that date for this reason.
Eve, on September the 9th, the National Football League will enter its 88th year broadcasting games. That's right. The first game it broadcast was in 1939. There was a study published last Wednesday that I'm sure everyone who's listening has heard about that says that roughly 1 in 4 former professional NFL players who had died over a 5-year period had CTE. Experts are using that model to predict that when we are watching a game right now, 1 in 4 of those guys will have CTE to such a severity that it will lead to their death. So we're watching The Running Man, and we're doing it on purpose. People on the teams are shitty people. None of them are good. They love the president. It's a bad scene from top to bottom, except for the halftime show. So I'm done. Okay.
All right, before we say goodbye, let's just mop up what we had in our list we still want to talk about. I will first introduce Slow Horses. Season 6 is coming. We watched it, I feel like, 12 months ago now.
We watched it in July.
It's been sitting on their servers for a long time, but it's a solid season, and you will enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I just want to mention there's a show called Nocturne, which is an Apple TV show, I think, with Liv Schreiber.
I believe that's right.
I think. And I was like, oh, I'll see what this is all about. And so, you know, I typed in, you know, show me the trailer. All these hits on YouTube, not one of them is official. There is no official trailer. They all say official, but they're all just speaking
all
about AI run amok. They're all just varying qualities of AI trailers. Some of them are just some AI voice talking over stills that they found on Getty Images, including the watermarks. Some are, they typed in Nocturne, and then this is what the movie is. This is pretty dumb, but that was annoying. And then finally, there's a show called Below. Are we familiar with Below?
Mm-mm.
Oh, Below, Tara.
Yes.
Is Josh Hartnett as a Newfoundland fisherman.
Oh, yes, I am familiar with this. I forgot that's what
And
it
there's
called.
Something in the waters.
Oh, no.
And there's only one little taste of his accent in the trailer, but it did make me laugh. So,
yay!
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds great. Yes, yeah. I did
so it's
know
gonna
about
be like
this.
Josh Hartnett in like thick sweaters.
Basically,
yes. And watch caps.
It feels like Widow's Bay light at this point. It, like, it has all the trappings of it, except it's like, oh, this is going to suck.
Those Foxy Fichtner hip waders. I'm in.
Okay.
There's also a Crystal Lake Friday the 13th show. I'm like, why are you doing this?
With Linda Cardellini. Mm. Mop Up For Me, Gilded Age Season 4, HBO, November 1st. I thought we were not going to get another season until 2027, so I was very excited when this popped up. What shall they be worrying about now? I don't know. I don't care. I will be watching.
Spats!
They haven't even built a railroad yet.
No.
They got to build it, and then the whole thing's got to go to shit. So they got a couple seasons left anyway.
Probably, yes.
Spoiler. Sorry.
It's okay. I don't think you can spoil history. Should be into, but am not. I'm going to go with Youth, which is on HBO Max, September 20th. Follows a 50-year-old divorcee search for sex and love, blah, blah, blah. It's a Sharon Horgan show. I like her on screen and behind the camera. She did both on this one, but this seems like that show with Katherine Hahn, Mrs. Fletcher from a few years ago that was also on HBO, so fine. No thanks. Should not be into, but am. Real Housewives of New York City season 16, which comes to Bravo September 9th. This is the one who got me in the door on this franchise in the middle of it was Jenna Lyons. She's gone. I don't know why I still care about any of these women, but I somehow do. I thought it was the only run and that this version had been canceled. Apparently, I was wrong. So I'll be watching that, unfortunately. Good for you shows for me. Brothers coming to Apple TV on September 23rd. This is the one where Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson are playing fictionalized versions of themselves under the direction of creator and Peabody Award winner Lee Eisenberg from The Office. These are just two people I don't need to see more of. Sorry. And a show no one should be into, Secret Lives of Mormon Wives Season 5. No reality show has ever been more cursed than this, and that is saying something. So, yikers. Sarah.
Show that I am into, Trespasses, is coming to PBS September 20th. Forbidden Love During the Troubles in 1970s Ireland. Normally, I'd be like, I'm good. I read Radden Keefe, but Gillian Anderson and Lola Pettigrew, I gotta do it. I'm excited. Return of the Lowdown. The Gold is back for season 2, October 18th on PBS. Yes, this is Grandpa Bunsey peak season here.
We started watching that. It's more of the same. So if you like one, you'll like two.
Huh? Oh, great. Show I should be into but am not. There wasn't really that much more here. East of Eden coming to October 1st on Netflix. Like, I want to support Martha Plimpton, but I don't understand why this is being remade. I can't make myself care about anything in this IP lane. So good luck to all. Show I should not be into and yet am, Quicksand Zone, Team Moms, Baseball, September 24th on Paramount Plus, a Kim Kardashian executive produced sports biz Moms and Dads.
Yeah.
I'm not proud of it, but I'll be there. Special Forces World's Toughest Test Season 5 with Oliver Hudson, David Charvet, and George Santos. Am I going to be watching because I hope it turns into a snuff situation? Yes, don't fucking judge me. And SVU Season 28,000 on October 8th. Good for you shows. I also had Brothers. I also had Traitors New Blood. I've tried Scrubs and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire reboots. So that was my list there. And then a show nobody should be into, Late Night Law Season 2, premiering October 2nd on A&E. This, we already have like 15 too many iterations of fucking live PD. Stop. Stop.
I thought it was a show about late night host wars, but somehow also a legal drama.
I mean, if it was Late Night Law and it was about like Law Roach with insomnia, just like licking an edible and going through his Netflix queue and like narrating it out loud, I would more than consider it. Watching cops driving around copping, fuck out of here.
They should have more slow TV concepts like that. Scandinavia has the train going through the landscape in the country and you can watch 14 hours of it and it'll go. But what about a guy just reading things? Like, I know there's podcasts like that, but like an actual person who might be a little crazy, you give him 2 hours to ramble on and you just tell him you can't be loud. That's all the thing. You just got to do it in a hushed voice.
Mm-hmm.
Put that on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Eve.
show that I'm into. The Diplomat is back on October 15th. I was thinking about this when you mentioned Madam Secretary. Like, Madam Secretary to me was like sort of the ultimate in terms of like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if things were this way without being like too up its like West Wing ass. And I feel like The Diplomat is like that, but more contemporary and with a little bit more of a bite. So love it. Love it. Can't wait for it to be back. Can't wait for people to tell Felicity Huffman she needs to brush her hair. Shows that I should be into that aren't. I will watch like any shitty horror thing that exists, as I just mentioned that I'm going to watch American Horror Story, but I also like watch like all those like shitty found footage things. But Dave already mentioned Crystal Lake, which is going to be on Peacock. And I feel the same way about the Carrie series that's going to be on Amazon. Like Dave said, it's just like, why? Maybe we need to stop making movies into series. I think that probably also applies to the Blade Runner thing.
Yeah.
Show I shouldn't be into, but am. Physical 100 Italy drops on September 11th. Physical 100 Mexico drops the following week on the 18th. I will watch these shows to the detriment of my house cleaning, my professional life. I am so addicted to the Physical 100 shows. And so my life is going to be ruined those weeks in September.
What are they?
Oh, my God. You haven't watched them? It's like, well, the last season, it was people from a variety of different countries, but it started as an Asian franchise. So it's this huge number of athletes. It starts with 100, and then they put them through physical challenges, and they drop off. So the most exciting thing is that typically the most ripped, amazing, Thor-like people usually wash out real early, and it ends up being like the cyclists and the wrestlers and things like right. that sort of stick around. So it's very validating if you're not someone with a Marvel body, but somebody who likes to go to the gym, likes to go to the gym.
Well,
yeah, I know, right? Then I just said that. I don't on know her. Other people will hear. Yeah.
Somebody who likes to have gone to the gym,
yes,
I think is
different.
What you meant to say.
I myself like to go to the gym. I'm not trying to virtue signal. I'm a mentally ill person.
Did we know this when we booked Eve? Something we were aware of?
I'll write it down.
I hate football and I like to go to the gym. I'm a piece of shit. But anyway, the physical shows are so great. And I'm so stoked that there's two more. And that takes me to Good For You. Sarah, you're going to hate that I say this, but OJ Origin of Evil. I am impressed that it exists because it's a new angle. It's about this reality show he was going to appear in, which I have not heard tackled comprehensively in another way. Am I going to watch this? No. I've had all the OJ I need in this lifetime, but I am glad that it's there. And I think that nobody should be into still flipping out, which...
Yeah.
I am complicit here. I believe that I successfully pitched an episode of Flipping Out to the canon many, many years ago. I think I was successful.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
So I'm part of the problem. I realize that this toxic behavior isn't cool anymore. Well, it's never cool. I'm really okay with it not being cool. I do not think that Jeff Lewis is okay with it not being cool. I think he's gotten worse in the interim, and I don't think we should be platforming him.
All right, let's go into our plugs. I will go first. I contributed to Defectors Reds Week, which is only loosely related to the Cincinnati Reds, but that is the premise. The culture editor, Brandy, invited me to watch the movie Reds and see what I could come up with. And I said, this is really stupid, but what if I ranked all of the handmade sweaters? And she was like, yes, please do that. So I did. And we'll link that in the show notes. It was by far the dumbest thing they published that week. And I'm very proud. Eve.
So I am Vanity Fair's weekend editor, which means that if you sign up for Vanity Fair Daily, our daily newsletter, you will actually get a top note written by me one, if not both days over the weekend, also on holidays. That is a consistent place to watch me make dumb jokes that probably should get me fired from Vanity Fair, but so far haven't. So fingers crossed, everybody. Also, this past week in the San Francisco Chronicle, I wrote a feature about Understory, a book that everyone is going to be talking about starting today. It drops on September the 1st, so when you hear this, it will be available to buy. It's an incredible book. I talked to the author, who is one of the most delightful people I've ever interviewed, and the link to my feature, I will hope, it will be in the show notes.
Absolutely.
I reviewed a recent documentary, Baby Doe, for Best Evidence's paid subscribers. It is a bleak sit. The subject matter is difficult. It's about what we are now, I believe, calling unperceived pregnancies and how forensic genealogy is being used to get justice for infants who were unperceived pregnancies, but also just to Iron Maiden women in yet another way. So if you don't think you want to watch that documentary, but you like a nice feminazi all-cap stem winder, I got that all day in that review. And that link will be in the show notes, or you can just go to bestevidence.fyi. And take it from there. Get a paid subscription. We have years and years of archives for you to enjoy for just $5 a month.
Woo. All right, we are off for Labor Day week. So here's what's coming at you in the next couple of weeks on the Shaoza on EEHG. This Friday, we're going to be talking about the Apple TV movie Mayday with Ryle Reynolds and Chris Braga. And this buddy film of some sort. And then we'll be unlocking a Patreon next week on our main show. And then back on Extra Extra Hot Great the week after, it's going to be the September 4th sitting. It's the show from Canada from 1971 called Anything You Can Do. And then back here in 2 weeks' time for a high value target, the hunt for Saddam Hussein. Wait, you didn't find out how it ended.
We won!
With guest TK. Oh, TK's here from 911 Lone Star.
Yes, exactly.
Great. All right. Fantastic. The Thanks, same. TK. That's what I like about Texas. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is our friend Eve. Eve, take it away.
It feels risky to propose a single episode of a first season show for the canon, especially when that show only has 10 episodes. It's a bold move to complain a full 10% of a series is canon-worthy, right? But I'm willing to take that risk for Widow's Bay, which EHG Club members already know was met with praise by this panel, especially when the episode in question is Your Baggage, which is the 8th episode of the show. So, in the 2024 film Heretic, Hugh Grant makes this great speech about how the Western world is all just iterations, copies that get more blurred as they're tackled generation by generation. Heretic's a shitty movie, but I think about that speech all the time. As I see Scream and Scary Movie shoot themselves up with TRT and roll back into theaters. Meanwhile, Ryan Murphy, who, God, how many times have we talked about him already this episode? I guess it's because of the proximity to Paul. Let's just say that he's still turning them out. Skewering the horror genre is basically the new horror genre, I think, in my crasser moments. Maybe we should just throw it and the Tupperware it's in just back into the garbage. But I really do believe that Widow's Bay brought fresh energy and excitement to... Hello, ears.
Yeah, that was Sandy. Guess I'll leave that in the show now. I usually cut those out.
Sorry, aww. I love you. You made me so happy. But Widow's Bay brought such fresh energy and excitement to the formula that it didn't feel much like a formula anymore. The best example of that was the episode we're discussing today, in which we see one of the most tried and true. The, why is this show still going if they beat the monster one? I'm sorry that's so poorly worded. I really tried to rework that. And I'm sure that, like, if Joseph Campbell were still alive, he would have come up with something snappier. But that's the best I can do. You know what I'm talking about. That whole thing where you're watching the family from Poltergeist start packing, even though they rid themselves of the angry ghosts, right? Or Alice killed Mrs. Voorhees, so why are we watching her sit in that boat? This time, it's the main Widow's Bay trio of Tom, Patricia, and Wick. They're sitting happily in this restaurant the day after they risk their lives to break the island's curse. But we, the viewer, know something they don't know. We're still here, and that must mean bad news for the island. So the first 13 or so minutes of this 38-minute episode, we, as viewers, grow increasingly tense because we're watching these three characters basking in the glow of a job well done. We know the job wasn't done at all because we're still watching. So we're squirming as Tom plans an off-island trip with his kid and Patricia, who, an actor Kate O'Flynn is arguably Widow Bay's breakout star, deals with the show's most horrifying situation yet. A fucked up takeout order. That's clip one.
This is the Driftwood Dino. Leave a message.
Hello, my name is Patricia. I ordered a chicken parm and a slice of the coconut cream pie, and I've got a turkey patty with no bun and a single sausage link. And I don't want a refund. I just want the person who did this to find out. And I don't want the person who did this to get into trouble. I just, you know, I just want them to learn from it. Better yet, I...
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Great.
If you guys just want to put it in the canon now, that's cool. I can stop right here. But so it's Patricia a few stressful minutes later. Well, it's stressful for us. She's listening to Enya's 1991 hit Caribbean Blue as she just sort of screws around in her house. That song's basically the audio version of Really Excellent Weed Gummy, though. But then Patricia is the one who first realizes that the Widow's Bay curse isn't over. In fact, it seems worse than ever, as the Boogeyman, one of those classic slow-walk mask slashers, is in her house. So the Boogeyman's a serial killer known for making heavy-breathing phone calls. Kids, ask your grandparents, to his eventual victims. It isn't just this show's take on Michael Myers. He's also hunted Patricia for 25 years, but not in the PTSD-pickled Laurie Strode way you might expect. Back in high school, Patricia claimed she'd received a Boogeyman call and later hid while he entered her house. Her more popular classmates never believed her and used her claims as one of probably a few reasons to ostracize her for the decades following. But Patricia's practical, and as she flees the Boogeyman, she doesn't hesitate to run into one of her classmates' houses, where her, basically, bullies for the last, like, 25-something years are having book club. As expected, they do not find her claims credible, and one confronts her in our second clip.
No, don't play her game. Don't. Everybody knows that she lied about the calls. All right, I lied about the calls. I knew it.
Oh my God.
Didn't I say it?
You said it.
I felt left out. I told one person, they told everyone, and then I had to double down. But I swear to God, he came to my house that night, and I swear he's back.
Okay, good to know. Bye-bye.
Chris, I am just telling you.
So they go away! Stop making this about you. It's not about you. I'm sorry, but I am not the reason that you don't have any friends. It's because you're fucking insane. Okay? Your little party, it almost killed everyone. And now you've ruined book club. You're so annoying. Just go bye-bye. All right? Go bye-bye. Bye-bye. Okay? Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Chris. She's the worst. She's the fucking worst.
Sure. It's great to see Patricia shock. It's not a taser. It's just one of those little shock devices, this bitch. But it's also such relief to hear her unburden herself of this lie she's carried all these years. This is the first time we as viewers realize that she has made up part of the story. And I think about how the rest of us get to grow up and move away from our hometowns. And so if we choose to grapple with adolescent humiliations, which often include untruths we doubled down on, Patricia can't, though, you realize in this moment. She's stuck here, essentially futureless. But even in this moment, she doesn't crumble. Eventually, she does best the Boogeyman, and she makes goddamn sure in scenes that bring the Enya back once more that this iteration of the killer won't come back. And then we get a double tap. The episode could have ended at the 30-minute mark, as Patricia and Wick, who earlier realized the Boogeyman was on the loose when he saw the Boogeyman's missing mask while visiting Historical Society head, tour guide, I don't know, Jerry. Okay, so here's a weird side note. Did you notice that Jerry is played by Nancy, another last name I could pronounce, Lenihan?
Mm-hmm.
The same actor who played the woman possessed by the cursed mask in Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 3 episode, Dead Man's Party?
No!
The mask connection, guys! Now I've turned into one of those 30 Easter eggs you missed. YouTubers kill me. But anyway, fun side note. I don't think they did that on purpose, but I kind of got stoked when I saw that. The show could have stopped in that moment. Patricia and Wick giving each other a knowing look. We're still watching. So there's more. I'm stressed out again. We don't get a break as the subsequent scene set up most of the incredibly fucked up things that are going to play out the rest of the season. To really underscore the point, Wick then heads to Tom's. Where Tom's finally having a nice night with his pothead kid, even though I'm still wondering, even as I say this to you guys now, what is in Tom's basement? Tom answers the door. He's looking all happy. Everything's great. And then we get the last line, the ultimate no shit Sherlock. That's our last clip.
It's not over.
I've listened to this panel struggle when an episode from a consistently excellent series is presented. The question, usually raised by Dave, is if this is the right episode to canonize in a show that's always good. I've increased the difficulty level for myself by choosing a show on which each episode is striking in its own way. But I'd argue that Your Baggage, which not only typifies the surely canon-worthy series, but moves it and the genre forward. It's also a legit great 38 minutes. 38 minutes, that's all we needed. It's a great ride. Thank you for considering.
Thank you, Eve. Dave, since you got called out in the presentations, I feel like you should go first.
All right. I mean,
not called out, name checked.
Yeah, I think that was fair if, hostile.
No, it's always good. I always appreciate it.
Yeah.
It seemed loving to me.
Yeah, sure. My favorite part of the show is Patty. So for me, you've picked the right episode as the showcase for her. And my absolute favorite part of this episode is after the boogeyman has been dispatched, she is really just not taking any chances and just tracks him through his journey from being dead on the ground outside the gas station to his final cremation with a shotgun right to his head. Just in case he's going to pop back up again, is such a great horror film note, you know, that they're always like, well, I guess that's that hand, you know, that hand motion, that's that dealt with. And she's like, no, we're going to follow this through until he is just dust. And the fact that that whole sequence is scored by Caribbean Blue is fantastic. I just absolutely 100% love that. Just a lot of great moments in that. The whole thing with her screwed up order at the start where she got a bunless turkey burger and one sausage link. She calls to complain, but just ends up really soft soaping the whole thing. And then, of course, it was all for naught because it was just a full mailbox in the other end. Just speaks to a lot of the character. And then when after that call, she just has like this moment of like, it's not impotent rage because I don't think she like can actually bubble up that much rage in that moment. It's just like, impotent impotence. She's just like, and I was like, oh, I've been there. Been there. This episode, as you were saying, sort of being feeling like at first a denouement episode where it doesn't really belong because we figured like we've got the crux of it already dealt with, made me think, you know, because of the introduction of the Michael Myers character, the boogeyman, like how much of a better version of Castle Rock this was than Castle Rock was.
Yeah. Yes.
That
yes.
Castle Great Rock calm. Should have been more like this show, which is everything about Stephen King is happening at all times, yeah. all at once. Mm-hmm. More any Stephen King, more every Stephen King. It just does very well with the pacing and the introduction and the drip, drip, drip of the elements that they want to bring out of his work in a legally safe way. And this episode really brought that home where it's like, okay, things are still bad. What are we going to do? It's going to be the Michael Myers episode within our universe of crazy characters. So like for me, this show is like making Stephen King type of stuff palatable to somebody like me. I'm not really big on Stephen King stories. I've watched a few of the tamer ones back when I was a kid. Yeah. Like the ones that aren't like super gory.
Yeah, you're a scaredy cat.
Like your Maximum Overdrives and stupid shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I feel like, is my Stephen King. And so I think this episode does a really good job of highlighting the world in which we are in, which is all Stephen King all the time.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, why don't you go next?
Okay. I enjoyed the ways that horror tropes were both respected and satirized in this, like this parodically slow chase where there's bursts of running and then she stops, turns around and like kind of waits for him to get back in sight, which you could argue is her just like making sure that she hasn't missed anything, but also is like, just keep running.
Mm-hmm.
The book club thing was very satisfying. All the other hens sort of being like, you called it, you call. And then she just gets tased and hits the deck and the SFX on her falling to the ground. So good. Yeah. The fucking worst is like, exactly. Who didn't want to do this to their high school nemesis? Certainly I would have. That he just keeps popping back up and then she is forced to train a shotgun on the crematory oven and then is like just sort of poking. I mean, it's all really good. But this show also understands that there is, in certain excellent lasting horror, there is a lot of overlap with trauma and grief that is not supernatural, and that this is how human beings manage emotional horror in their lives, is to sort of say that it's, you don't understand what a vampiric serial killer is as a like 8th century villager, so you make up vampires to explain what seems beyond the pale of human experience. And that aspect of grief and making up stories, and in the mayor and his son's case, lies, yes, but then the actual reality is this very sort of gothic, deeply, deeply sad story. And then coexisting alongside all of this is this very black humor that just understands that a lot of the more outre aspects of human existence and emotion are kind of funny.
What did you think, Sarah, about the scene in the gas station, just speaking about that kind of humor, where the two guys are just watching the Casino side play yeah. out?
Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, you're not supposed to, do that. But I also, this is what I love about it. It's like, this is that, like, final girl trope turned on its head in a bunch of different ways. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she is triumphant and she is smart enough to know, like, you can't let them make a fucking sequel. You got to stand over at the remains with a shotgun. But also that she'd be like, okay, this is how we're going to do this with the last remaining 1% on the taser and the gas. And then she's like, click, 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 fuck, and has to go in and get $20 put on the pump. Like, this is how it would be for real people trying to get through the situation. I think that the show starts from a place of sort of braiding all of these ideas together, that there is grief and trauma in these stories, and that horror stories are a way of managing it, and also that some of this shit is like funny and deserves parody. And you have some wonderful performances and unusual characters, and this woman in her absolutely giant 3XL t-shirt and her fuzzy boots just like trying to make this work running through town. I think many of us felt seen, but it's like, yeah, you're just trying to clean out the closet, minding your own business, and then fucking boogeyman. So this, like all Widow's Bay episodes, I would say, gave me a lot to think about and to think about why it's built the way it is. But also I laughed and I was tense and yeah, it's a great show. And that reminded me that I have to jump my husband in on this show ASAP because he will love it.
I don't have a ton to add to all of the excellent points that you both already made. I love, Eve, when you're describing like the situation where the audience is ahead of the characters. And I do have in my notes from the beginning of this episode, oh, they don't know it's episode 8. Yeah. They don't understand. And that's exactly what's going on. We do. We know there's more to come. And you didn't even touch on how the scenes with Tom and his son set up the last two episodes of the season. Evan is going through the letters that he has found. And yes, I also love the what is in the basement, because that's one of when I wrote a piece for GQ about the questions we still need answered in season two. I believe that was one of the what is in the basement. But when he's going through them and reading these letters that his mother wrote when she was not mentally well, including everyone has two mothers, a public mother and a secret mother, or however she puts it, where it's like, oh, okay, now from the end of the season, we understand what that means. That part of it, the episode 80-ness of it, is what makes that so tragic. Because Tom is so excited to bring Evan to, like, go to a baseball game, go look at colleges, which it seems like wasn't something Evan was even bothering to consider before this moment. And then to have to find out, well, no, none of that is actually going to happen. Sorry. Not until I heard the clip without the visual did I realize or suspect that the voice on the outgoing message at the diner is Jessica Chaffin in character, basically. It's Ronna Glickman. I can't confirm it's her. It's not on her credits, but I'm pretty sure it is because she knows Katie Dippold. She was in The Heat, the movie The Heat, which Dippold wrote. So I think it's probably her. If you haven't listened to Ask Ronna, the podcast, it's wonderful. And I do think this is an excellent payoff to what was set up in the earlier episode, Beach Reads, the first Patty-centric episode, where we first see her amid all of her high school tormentors and are first exposed to the idea of like how horrible it would be to be socially ostracized in a place that you cannot leave because of a curse, that's a curse in itself on top of the other curse. And the fact that this episode ends with us not knowing if the boogeyman killed all those bitches in the house before he jumped out the upper window is a nice little touch. And Chris is only credited in those two episodes. We do not see her again. So it is very possible that she died. And I think we could all agree she deserved it.
All right. Thank you, Tara. Let's put this to the vote. Sarah D. Bunting, what are you thinking here?
I think I will vote yay.
Tara?
Me too.
Me too. So... That means that Widow's Bay, Season 1, Episode 8, Your Baggage, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
and will not tolerate a loser.
Nope!
It is time to discover who is our winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It's Law & Order Special Victims Unit, which is adding J. Smith Cameron as a new peer for Benson in season 28. I feel like they've started doing this, that it's like, oh, this respected actor is coming in playing a role that seems like supportive and allied with Benson, and then it all goes wrong, and then Benson prevails because executive producer. But yeah, who cares? It's J. Smith Cameron. She's always great.
Shout out to Benson.
Shout out to Benson. Mm-hmm. And loser of the week.
My loser of the week is CNN. We recorded last week's episode in the moments after we all found out that Dolly Parton had died. So this was on my mind this week. But the reason that CNN is the loser is because they had to apologize for mistakenly airing a photo of a Dolly Parton impersonator in a report they made on her death. And I'm going to link this in the show notes because the person that was misidentified as Dolly Parton is like not even a very convincing Dolly Parton impersonator, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But go to the show notes, click that link and see if you agree.
But I bet they're really happy that happened.
They probably are.
Good feather in their cap.
Yeah, feather in their cap and their bra, for sure.
Yeah, sure. All right. Well, speaking about feathers in your caps, do you know what time it is?
It's not regulation game done.
Sounds like it.
Hello, it's me, the most recent winner of the Game Time season, which means that I'm the author of Non-Regulation Game Time. And in honor of our guest Eve this week, we are playing a true crime adjacent game. You don't have to know much about true crime or really about anything else because it is a closest to the pin bidding game. It's called Ted Like Me, and here is how it works. I will give you the name of an actor who has played the role of Ted Bundy in film or television.
Oh boy.
Then I will give you a show that that actor also appeared in. You need to guess how many episodes of that show the actor was in. Closest to the pin gets 1 point. If you guess it exactly, that is a bullseye for 3 points. We are not playing Price is Right rules. Going over is fine. You just have to be the closest. Everyone will play every round. We will rotate who bids first. There are 9 rounds and a tiebreaker. One gross worth equalizer moment. And today's winner will receive a relevant and yet tasteful vintage novelty from me. Are we ready to play Ted Like Me?
Yes.
Yes.
Picky, who's going first?
We will start with Tara.
Okay.
We will start with Tara, then Dave, then Eve. That will be our order. All right, going in chronological order of Bundy. We'll begin with Mark Harmon's iconic performance in 1986's Deliberate Stranger. Mark Harmon also played Dr. Jack McNeil in Chicago Hope. Remember that thing? I didn't either. How many episodes of Chicago Hope was Mark Harmon in? Tara, you can start us off when you're ready.
Okay, 70.
70? David T. Cole?
Well, first of all, everybody remembers Chicago Hope when you ran out of ER as you go to watch Chicago Hope. Let yourself down.
I never got that desperate, actually, but thank you.
Mark Harmon, was he a writer? I don't remember him being in the... I remember Christine Wettesternutz.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mandy Patink, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Patink.
So I'm going to put him at 39. 39 is my guess.
Okay. Eve Beatty?
69.
Nice.
However, Tara is the closest at 70. He was in 95 episodes of Chicago Hope. So that is 1 point for Tara.
Okay.
Our next Bundy is Michael Riley Burke, as Tara and I recently discovered on our sister podcast, Again With Them, when he was interviewed on 902 and OMG. He'll be showing up on our cousin podcast, Quaid in Full, because he also played D.A. Jerry Reynolds on Dennis Quaid period procedural Vegas. How many episodes of Vegas did Burke appear in? Dave, you are up first.
What show is this?
Vegas. It was like set in the 60s. Michael Chiklis was in it as a mob boss.
Okay. Wait, is this that NBC show?
No, that was just called Las Vegas.
Oh,
this
okay.
This is a different one.
Well, this is a crapshoot. I don't know. 17. I don't know anything about that show. So 17 is going to be a bullseye. I can feel it.
Was this like the reboot of like the Robert Urich Vegas?
No. That's Vega dollar sign.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Just wanted to be sure.
Well, you're going to think I'm just being a bitch because of your 69 from the last round, but I'm going to say 13 because that was my true answer.
Wow. Clustered.
Yep.
Indeed. It was even fewer than that. There were only 13 episodes total anyway, and Bert was in 9 of them, so that's 1 point for Eve.
Okay.
The next Bundy is Billy Campbell. He played the role in The Stranger Beside Me in 2003. Campbell also played Dr. Alan Farragut in the hilarable sci-fi show Helix. Before he got upstaged forever by Steven Weber's Helix head, how many episodes of Helix was Billy Campbell in? Eve, please begin the bidding.
10.
26.
I don't remember anything about how much he was in Helix, but he feels like a book ND. Here I am, then I'm going to come in here and look at and inspect your stuff and go back to the military and tell him what a bad job you're doing. Sure. Four episodes.
Well, well, Tara, the Helix head has smiled upon you, literally. That's a bullseye. 26 episodes of Helix.
Wow. All right. Yeah.
And we'll go back to Tara, who got 3 points on that last one, by the way, to start our Cary Elwes round. Yes, Cary Elwes played Bundy in The River Man in 2004. He also played something called a Brad Fulmer in The X-Files. How many episodes of Fulminating did Elwes do in The X-Files, Tara Ariano?
5.
5. David T. Cole?
4.
Eve?
Please pick 6.
No, the thing is, I was thinking 4 even before Tara guessed, and then I was like all worried, like, oh, I don't want to say 4.
Well, don't
like
pick 3. That would be
mean. Oh, no, I'm going to say 6.
Yeah.
Even though I know it's wrong.
No, it was a bullseye. 6 episodes as Brad Fulmer.
I feel like Dave deserves that.
I feel like I need my vague on this one.
Yeah.
I know. Seriously. Okay. Parker Lewis actually can lose if he's playing Ted Bundy, which Corin Nemec did in 2009's Bundy, A Legacy of Evil. Nemec has also played Jonas Quinn in Stargate SG-1, a show that famously exists.
You know we were recently, I don't even know if it's made it to air, but we were talking, it hasn't. But anyways, there's a Christmas special episode coming up and we're talking about writers that are just like, oh my fucking God, I can't believe I'm doing this again. I think there's writers in Hollywood whose only job is to come up with the post-colon parts of these titles. Yeah. There's like 2 guys and that's all they do and they fucking hate their lives. I don't know, Legacy of Evil? Go.
Yeah, or it's like the big lottery, like the big wheel with all the balls in it that Yolanda Vega used to turn.
That's right.
And it's like just a bunch of nouns.
Yeah.
Of. All right, we can't start with that. We'll just put this aside for now.
All right. Nemec has also played Jonas Quinn in Stargate SG-1. How many episodes of Stargate SG-1 did he appear in, David T. Cole?
Oh, my God. I cannot picture him in Stargate SG-1. That's pretty funny.
He talked about it in his 90210 OMG interview
at length. Oh, okay. So more than one, probably.
Hard to believe you didn't absorb every syllable of that.
I'm going to say he feels like a half a season story arc kind of guy, so I'm going to put him at 9 episodes.
Okay. Eve?
I'm just so crushed that this wasn't going to be a question about The Stand, just sort of to round out all our Stephen King talk today. But I assume that this is in sort of his weasel era, which I think sort of got kicked off by The Stand. So I'm going to say this is an old show, right? So 23.
23. Tara?
19.
Eve is the closest to the pin. Ooh. Actual number was 26.
Okay.
Eve is closest with 23.
So close.
And now that we're a little more than halfway through, can I get some scores?
All right, I have Eve with 5, me with 4, Dave looking to get on the board. Dave, do you concur?
I concur.
Very good.
Okay, so Dave.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge.
Okay, great.
Question.
Ooh!
10 points for...
Ted Bundy does have his own IMDb page. Your job, Dave, is to guess within 10 how many credits Bundy has as self and archival footage. That's 2 separate categories. Bundy, they're functionally the same thing. You are basically trying to guess how many projects have used footage of Bundy. If you guess within 10, it's 3 points, and a bullseye here is worth 5. Self and archival footage.
Think he's got an agent?
There's probably someone who has to give permission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The estate?
Yeah. I guess.
What a weird job.
Sure he does.
Seriously.
Okay, so footage appearances and whatnots across all time for Ted Bundy. 111.
That is within range. The total was 7 self plus 96 archival for 103. Woo! Your range is 93 to 113. That is within range. So you are now on the board with 3 points.
Right. Nicely done, Dave.
Thanks. I'm a big Bundy fan. Love his work.
Yeah. Good job, Dave. Bad job, humanity.
Yes.
This has been my Ted Bundy talk.
Dave has 3. I have 4. Eve has 5. Close one.
All right. Here we go. It's back to Eve. For the James Marsters iteration of Bundy, whom Marsters played in The Capture of the Green River Killer. Marsters was also in Smallville, which I had completely forgotten. Same. Playing Milton Fine / Brainiac. Sure. Eve, in how many episodes of Smallville did that occur for James Marsters? Start us off.
I'm too cool to know the answer to this question, so I'm completely guessing. No idea. This show was on like for freaking ever too, right? 17.
17. Tara?
3. And before we pass it to Dave, I want to make sure Dave knows this is James Marsters, not James Marsden.
From Buffy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Brainiac feels like a one-season character, but also Brainiac has like this giant head, like canonically, I think, with like stuff. So I think he would be a prosthetic heavy character. So I don't think I'm going to use him a lot. So I'm going to be a total dick and say 4.
Well, that is not helping you because Eve, with 17, is the closest. The actual number is 14. 14
wow.
episodes is this guy? Sure. Back to the top of the order for Zac Efron's Bundy in 2019's Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile. Efron also played Cameron Bale in mid-aughts fashion designer raises her orphaned nibblings WB drama Summerland. Uh-huh. How many episodes of Summerland did Efron appear in? Tara, get us rolling.
9.
David T. Cole.
6.
And Eve.
11.
Man, Eve is on fire with this, I swear to God, random game. The correct answer was 16. Eve is closest to the pin for 1 point.
Nice.
I see how it is.
Sticking with former WB stars, come on, Dave, this is where you're a Viking, everyone knows. Chad Michael Murray did a decent job in a crappy film called Ted Bundy, American Boogeyman in 2021.
Okay.
He was also in Agent Carter. Sure, good for him. David T. Cole, how many episodes of Agent Carter was Chad Michael Murray in?
All right. I had 2 short seasons, I think. So it's probably 20-ish episodes. And I'm going to put him at 12. 12 episodes is my answer.
All right. Eve.
God, I don't even remember him. And I actually watched that show.
It's untrustworthy because he has 3 first names.
He does. Solid serial killer, though, to have 3
names. Yeah.
True.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with 5.
5. And Tara?
8.
Oh, good job, Dave. The actual answer was 14. Dave gets a point for 12.
Nice.
Closest to the pin. Okay. And approaching the last question of regulation, one more time with the scores.
Dave and I are tied with 4 each. Eve has 6. Dave, do you concur?
I have Eve at 7.
Oh, 7 is what I meant. Sorry, I have 7 too.
Way to count, Count Dexter.
Sorry.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Still anyone's game, technically.
Mm-hmm.
And Eve is going to kick off the bidding for Luke Kirby, who played Ted Bundy in No Man of God, also from 2021. Kerbs was also in The Deuce, playing Gene Goldman. How many episodes was Kirby in of The Deuce? Eve, hit it.
This was an HBO show. I think it was only 2 seasons.
6.
6. Tara, your thoughts?
I'll say 9.
Okay. Dave.
I've forgotten what show we were talking about.
The Deuce.
The Deuce.
The Deuce. Oh, The Deuce. I'm going to say 9.
Didn't Tara just
say
9?
Didn't I say that?
You didn't let me finish, but I can't. So I'm going to say 10?
Okay.
Well, good call, Dave, because you're closest to the pin. It was 17.
Oh, wow.
So you are closest to the pin.
Excellent. Well, Woo! I didn't win, but the important thing is who I beat.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for that exciting information.
And at the end of regulation, I believe Eve is our winner.
That's right. Eve has 7. Dave has 5. I am shameful third place
with
4.
Yeah, suck it.
Aw. I do have a tiebreaker. Should we play it for one steel meal?
Sure. Right.
John T. O'Brien, you know, played Ted Bundy in an episode of the Ed Gein season of Monster in 2025. How many of John T. O'Brien's IMDb entries are detective? How many times is O'Brien credited as a detective?
Hi, tight, tight, tight.
We'll go in reverse order of finish. So, Tara, if you would like to start.
Sure, 16.
16. Dave.
22.
Okay. And Eve.
I swear I had this in hit my mind before Dave said it. 23.
Bullshit.
That's a steal meal for Tara.
Hey.
He only has like 8 credits and 2 of them are detective.
Okay.
Another classic butting zag.
And that is that. Congratulations, Eve.
Good job, Eve.
Valued guest.
Valued guest.
All right, guys, that is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. We dropped in to provide you a little color on the upcoming fall TV season before getting spooky with Eve's successful Widow's Bay pitch. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Eve was the winner of this week's game time from Sarah. Next up, it's May Day on Friday's Extra, Extra Hot Great. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
to review, I'm dead, I'm dead, I'm already dead, come see me.
Sarah D. Bunting.
A lot of old photos I gotta give away today.
And E. Beatty.
She's the worst, she's the fucking worst.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Thank you. All right. No, no, no. I got this. See you around.